everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on retirement at risk. Is it your retirement that's at risk when we come back? You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed at 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make, to prepare it, to cook it, to serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Why is it that government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that you and I buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking this week about retirement. Everybody dreams of retirement. Everybody is preparing for retirement. I remember at my class reunion here a couple of years ago, the number one topic. See, when you get to be an old fart like I am, you know, your number one topic in life is retirement. It's the only thing anybody's got any time to talk about. And so everybody's trying to talk about their one-upsmanship, about how they have prepared for retirement better than you have. It's kind of like fishermen talking about fish, you know, that everybody's got a fish story, and so the guy that's telling his fish story, he's going to one-upsman the guy that just told the story before him, and then the guy that's going to tell the next story is going to one-upsman the guy that's telling the story now, and so on down the line. Or it doesn't make any difference whether you're talking about automobiles, my car's better than yours, or if we're talking about fish, my fish is bigger than yours, or if we're talking about retirement, my retirement package is bigger and better than yours. So we sit here and lie to each other is what we really do. And so I'm listening to all these lies. Now, I'm the only guy there at the whole class reunion that isn't retired. Now, not only am I not retired, I'm not even signed up for Social Security. I opted out of the Social Security system here many years ago. And everybody else is talking about their retirement and retirement packages and how much they're going to get from the corporation and how much they've saved in stocks and bonds, and you know how all this money is just flowing in. And I'm sitting over here, I'm still working. I'm still behind the microphone and I'm still working every day. I go out and milk my cow and do all these things, and I said, well, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to work until the day I die. And they looked at me like, huh? And then they're all sitting back saying, you know, this guy Gordon was the slowest kid in the class. I can remember that when we were in school. He was one of the dumber kids, you know. I never denied it. I probably wasn't very bright, and I didn't do very well in school, but I've been able to support myself all my life, never been on welfare, don't intend to go on welfare. I'm able to feed, clothe, and house my own family. So that's a step in the right direction. But the number one thing on people's minds, if you're as old as I am, it's retirement. And if you're already retired, it's how do I keep my retirement and how do I make ends meet? And if you're not retired yet, you're planning for retirement. Retirement is a preoccupation in America. Work doesn't even come up on the radar screen. If you're sitting here talking about production and how do we produce more, how do we create more wealth, how do we grow the economic pie, nobody's interested in talking about that. We're interested in how do we get out of work, how do we do less work, how do we produce less and get paid more for it. Well, when I was a kid, the number one topic among the old-timers, now I've got to keep in mind, you know, when I was a kid, 15 years old, I worked for old men. I mean, these guys were 40, 50, 60 years old. And every single one of them, without exception, whether he was a Republican or a Democrat, would say to me, the downfall of America will be the unions. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. Now, I've been watching this for 50 years, and all those old-timers are dead and buried and pushing up daisies now, but I'm not sure that the unions are the cause. They're certainly not helping any, but I'm not sure that they are the lone cause of this thing of the economic demise of the American economy. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. But I'm going to show you a couple of articles here and tell you a little story here about these labor unions and how powerful they are and what they're doing to your retirement. You know, we started this conversation with a fellow by the name of Ed Beltram. Whatever happened to the golden years? One family wonders, from Reader's Digest, February 2005. I read you the story. This guy Beltram, he's retired. He's getting $4,200 or $4,300 a month. It's $50,000 a year. He's above the median average. He can't make ends meet, so he took a job at $7.50 an hour. I don't know if he was a union man or not. I'm not criticizing you union guys. Hell, I used to be a union guy. I belonged to the Machinist Union, the Teamsters Union, the Boilermakers Union. I mean, I'm an old-timey union guy. I got out of the unions because there's no money in it. I got into sales and business because that's where the money's at. But I just wanted to point out to you that there are some problems with these labor unions, and you can see it with this Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I. I think it used to be called Delco Remy. When I was a kid, I don't know where this Delphi came from. It kind of slipped in there. But these guys are making $65 an hour. Now, the guys that are making the $65 an hour, if you ask them, no, we don't get $65 an hour. Hell, they don't even know how much money they make. I used to work for a union. I didn't know how much money I made either. So let me tell you how much money you're making, you Delphi guys. You're getting paid $27.50 an hour, but you got $35 worth of fringe benefits, you know, like medical care and dentist and retirement and all this. See, but you don't know how much that retirement is. Money's being paid in on this retirement, but if you went to the average guy and said, how much money are you making? He'd say, well, I get $27.50 an hour. I get $17 an hour. I get $7.50 an hour. He can tell you how much he's getting paid an hour, but he does not know what he's getting paid. But you can rest assured that the accountants at General Motors know how much this guy's getting paid, because it's $65 an hour. $35 in fringe benefits and $27.50. Jesus, that's getting right up there, I'd say. That's pretty good money. Now, General Motors, when they turn out an automobile, they got a $1,600 bill on retirement on every car that comes off the assembly line. That means that there's a $1,600 bill when they sell that car that they got to pay into this retirement program. And other car manufacturers don't have that kind of expense. And so General Motors has gone from 43% of the market share down to 26%. They're on their way to 23%. General Motors is on its way to bankruptcy. So is Ford. It's a race to the bottom. We don't know whether Ford's going to file for bankruptcy before General Motors or General Motors is going to go bankrupt first. Remember, Chrysler went upside down first. And they had to merge with a German company. So Dodge is no longer an American company. It's a German company now. Just thought I'd let you know that. So we only have two car companies left in America. It's GM and Ford, and both of them are going bankrupt. Is it caused by the unions? Well, the union guys are looking forward to retirement. And I'm an old-timey union guy, and I can tell you from experience that the number one priority of a union man on the job is not productivity. It is, how can I do less work, less useful, productive, meaningful work, creativity or creation of wealth, and how can I get paid more for it? That's his goal in life. That's what he's trained for. Producing less and getting paid more. Now, out in the real world, I mentioned this to you a couple days ago, that in the real world, where money and productivity rule the day, the CEO who's bringing in, you know, $50-100 million a year, or $50 or $100 million retirement package, is getting paid for what he produces. He took the Disney company from $40 a share and moved it up to $60 a share on his watch, which makes the company worth $3 billion more money, and so he gets paid $200 million. And of course, the guy that's making $27.50 an hour looks at that and says, that's obscene, I'm going to work less and produce less, and I want to get paid more money. Now, along comes the Indians and the Chinese. Now, these people haven't been making a lot of money historically for a long time, and they're willing to work for right at $2 a day. I think it's $2 a day. It could be a dollar a day. I've forgotten exactly, but... You know, for us Americans, and I'm sure you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders, the idea of living on $2 a day is obscene. Hell, you couldn't go out here for $2 and get a cup of coffee and a donut off of the donut truck, you know, come and buy a coffee break. So that's pretty obscene, but these people are willing to work for $2 a day. Furthermore, their mind is on, how can I produce more for less, to make my boss more money so that I can boost my nation, my company, and my productivity, and ultimately make more money. This guy is interested in putting more bales in the barn, not in how much money do I get paid for the gallons of sweat that comes out of my pores. And that's where the rubber meets the road, boys and girls. That's where it's at. Now, let me tell you a little story here about a guy by the name of Kirk here. Let's see if I got his name here. It's called the Senior Education Fellow, David W. Kirkpatrick, from the U.S. Freedom Foundation. There's a little article. He sends me a piece there about every week. And they're always good. If you wanna get some information, I think you could go to www.freedomfoundation.us. And it's called Public Educators' Problems Are Not All Their Fault. Public educators, their problems aren't all their fault. And this is written by David W. Kirkpatrick, the U.S. Freedom Foundation. He says, one problem with policymakers is that they insist upon making policy. Perhaps nowhere is this more of a problem than in public education. And a recent study by Common Good of laws and regulations affecting a typical New York City high school is the latest example. The study found that more than 60 sources of law and regulations, including thousands of provisions, applying to a New York City high school. These regulations include New York State's more than 800-page school law, 720 pages of regulations from the State Commissioner of Education, more than 15,000 decisions in 43 volumes of the Commissioner's office, the 204-page teacher union contract, I want to repeat that, 204-page teacher union contract with the district, and nearly 700-page No Child Left Behind Act, and more than 200 pages of regulations just concerning student discipline. Let me add that up, boys and girls. Just bear with me here a second. We got 60 sources of laws and regulations, so let's type in 60 here. Including thousands of provisions applying to a New York City high school. I'm just going to put in 60, not thousands. These include New York State's more than 800 pages. So let's put in 800 pages from New York State. 720 pages of regulations from the state commissioners. Let's put 720 in here. And then 15,000 decisions in 43 volumes. I won't put in 43 volumes at 500 pages each. Just put in 15,000, shall we? And in the commissioner's office, and then 204 pages, that's 204 on the teacher's union contract, and then 700 pages in the No Child Left Behind Act. This is Congress who couldn't keep their keep themselves away, so they put in 700 pages. And that totals 17,484 pages. Boys and girls, most of you listening to me couldn't read 17,484 pages, much less comprehend what the hell it all says or what it all means and how to put it all together. And I'll guarantee you this, neither can any teacher in the New York City schools. So, to put it another way, there isn't a teacher in the New York City schools that really knows what the hell's going on in the school system because they don't know what all the rules and regulations are. None of the administrators do. Now, this is not a formula for profit and gain. This is not keep it simple, stupid. This is designed to make this process as complex and complicated and as obfuscated as absolutely possible. 65 steps are involved in suspending a disruptive student. So if you got a smart-ass, pimply-faced punk, you got 65 steps involved to suspend this kid. You got 83 steps that are involved in firing a teacher. 38 steps that you have to go through in filling a teacher vacancy. You got 99 steps to go through to replace a heating system. You got 99 steps to go through to conduct an athletic event, including the size of the ear flaps. And 35 steps in suspending a special education student. And some of these procedures can take years to resolve. And even then, such an attempt to fire a teacher may cost as much as $100,000 and still not be successful. So if you're running a business, and just picture this. Now, you're running a business, and I can tell you from personal experience, I'm an old-timey union guy. Boy, once you've got seniority in a union job, it's nigh on impossible to get rid of you. So if you're a fireman in New York City or a policeman in some town, and you're in the government dole system and you've got a pension coming, by God, it's really tough to fire you. Now, remember, our title of our series this week is Your Retirement Safe? And you New York City teachers and firemen and policemen, your retirement is not safe at all. In fact, you guys are going to take it in the shorts. I mean, you're going to take it in the shorts. Not because your union's weak, but because when the economy collapses, you're going to get paid every dollar that you've been promised. But those dollars are not going to buy anything. And that's the Achilles heel. So the government is going to fulfill its contractual obligation to you. But after they've given you the check isn't going to be worth anything. And that's why I brought up the subject, you know, because you just saw it happen with United Airlines. And you're in the process of watching it happen with Delphi. And you can rest assured that it's going to happen with General Motors and Ford because they can't afford to pay those pensions. That's the point I'm making. And these pension funds have been invested in the stock market. Your pension funds, you teachers in New York, you know, that we can't fire, we can't get rid of, that can't teach, but we've got your pension funds are invested in Delphi and General Motors, who are going bankrupt. Let's wake up, boys and girls, and smell the coffee. Now, if you're a fireman or a policeman or you're a teacher, and I'm sure that you see yourself as being a good teacher, a good fireman, and a good policeman, but I want to tell you, as a businessman, if I'm running a business and I need to fire somebody, I need to fire him because I need to maintain productivity. And productivity in a company like General Motors, see, they've lost from 43% of the market share to 26%, they've lost a lot of business, and in the process, they've got to close factories and lay people off. Now, over in China, you know, they're moving their car operations over to China because they can pay those guys $2 a day and those guys will get their ass out there and work. They actually produce automobiles. And they're not going to receive any pension at the end of the program, and no unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, or all the other perks and benefits that you're getting over here. So it would seem like to me that in just the competitive spirit of things over here, we ought to be willing to give up a little bit in order to gain a lot. But we see, for instance, in California, when you come to the people of California, now Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing this. He came to him the other day and he said, "Now listen, we got a real budget mess over here. We've squandered and spent and screwed around over here until we've wasted our inheritance, and we got to make some changes." And by God, the voters of California told the governor where he could stick that crap. Now, didn't they? So, as an outsider, I'm not criticizing you voters in California, and I'm not criticizing the government. I'm just telling you that your government's broke and you can't fix it. So, as an outsider, I'm sitting over here and I say, "Well, do I want to invest in California's municipal bonds?" And the answer is, "No, sir, I don't." And furthermore, I think you're going to find a bunch of other people that one of these days are going to wake up to reality, and they also are going to say, "Well, we're not going to invest in California bonds either." And little by little, piece by piece, you're going to see the entire American economy turn upside down. And then what we went through in the 1930s, we're going to have an opportunity to repeat in the early 21st century. Now, that's just a conclusion that I come to based upon the facts that I see being presented to me. So when David Kirkpatrick sends me this piece of mail, and I read the first two paragraphs, I say to myself, "Do I want to invest in New York City bonds?" And the answer is, "No, sir, I don't." Now, boys and girls, I'm not a very smart fellow, and I'm not any brighter than you are. I think my IQ, you know, on a good day, if it's sunny, might push 100. And if your IQ is at 120 or 30, and you're a pretty bright kid, and you went to college, and you got some letters after your names, listen, you're just as smart as I am. Probably a little bit smarter. I'll give you credit for that. Now, let me ask you, after having read these first two paragraphs to you, do you want to invest in New York City bonds or in California bonds? You know, it's just a matter of, well, what do you think? Now, I have not been an investor in America for the last 30 years. I have been watching the deterioration of the nation and the economic system now since about 1970, when I kind of got alerted to the fact that maybe things weren't as good as we thought they were. It was in 1978 that I dropped out of Social Security, but it was a little bit before that I started to realize that, hey, things aren't running as well here in this country as they could. And that if we continue on the way we are, let me give you a couple of numbers here. Get your pencil out here and sharpen your pencil. Let me show you something about your public schools. The national average now, it costs $7,000 to educate a kid in public school. Now, I don't know if that's high, low, or in the middle. It's just the number, just write down $7,000. That's what it costs to educate a kid in public school. Now, they measure the results that we get by what they call percentiles. I'm not really sure I understand what the hell they're talking about, but here's what you get. If you've got a kid in the Cleveland public school system, you know, any major metropolitan school system, hell, it can be Los Angeles, New York, or Cleveland, he's going to score in the inner city at the 28th percentile. So just put $7,000, and then right over here, 28. Can you do that? Okay. Now, in New York, they spend a little bit more than the national average. And in fact, one school district up there, their average is $14,000, double the national average. $14,000. Now, what that tells us is that out here in Poughkeepsie, New York, they must be spending $3,500. But the moral of the story is the national average is $7,000. And in the inner city schools where they score the lowest at 28, they spend more money. So in the New York City schools, they're spending $14,000 per student, and they're getting them at the 28th percentile. All right. Now, the national average is if you've got $7,000 being spent, on average, nationwide, they're scoring at the 50th percentile. All right, so nationwide, you've got 50. Inner city schools are 28. Now, The next step up is private school. I mean, you know, you send your kid to the local Catholic school. He'll score at the 80th percentile, and it costs $2,600 to educate him. So put $2,600 over here, and then put 80th percentile over here on the right. And on the left, you put down $2,600, and then over here on the right, you write in 80th percentile. You see where you're going here? You got 7,028. You got 7,000 averages 50, and then you got 2,600 over here. That averages 80. Now here's the champion. If you're educating a kid in school, there's 2 million children in America being homeschooled now. Put down $546. That's in the left column. $546, and then put 86th percentile over here in the right-hand column. Now here's what happens here. If you're spending $7,000 to educate a kid in the public school system and he's scoring at the 28th percentile and you compare him with the $546 homeschooled kid who's scoring at the 86th percentile, what that nets out on the bottom line is this. It costs you 13 times more to educate that kid in the public school and you get one-third the results. Well, let me ask you this. Let's suppose that you're going to go out and buy a car. And you got this Yugo or Kia or some other foreign brand of car over here, see? And it's going to cost you 13 times more than a Chevrolet. Would you buy it? Would you pay 13 times more to get a car of comparable value? Would you pay 13 times more to get a car that's one-third as good as? Because that's what we do in the public school system. That's what we're buying in the public school system. And the public school system is the most heavily unionized organization in America. I mean, it's called the National Teachers Union, is it? It's the NEA, National Education Association, I guess, is the union. And these guys, I mean, they write policy. And Governor Schwarzenegger can just tell you. If you want to know who's running the state of California, it's the NEA. Well, you know, them and a couple other unions out there, and they're just, this is the way things are going to run. So you people in California cannot reform your economic system. And if you continue on the way you're going, nobody's going to buy your bonds. And then if you extrapolate that to all the rest of the cities and counties and towns and states in America, your economy's going to collapse. And that's the point of this week's program. Is your retirement safe? And the answer is no, it isn't. Your retirement's at risk. It's invested in the stock market. You've got a system that's broke, and you can't fix it. It's like riding on the Titanic. We haven't hit the iceberg yet, but we're traveling at 22 knots in the dead of the night. We've got all the boilers fired up. This ship is running as fast as it can straight into 5,000 square miles of icebergs. Do you want to ride on this boat? I don't. I got off the damn thing years ago. I got off this ship in 1978. I said, hell, I'm not going to ride this. This is insane. Now, you haven't hit an iceberg yet. The Americans have not hit an iceberg. All around you, there are icebergs, and the ship is sailing through at 22 knots. And most Americans are just totally oblivious. They haven't got a clue as to what the hell's going by the ship out there because it's in the dead of the night, and nobody can see what's going on. But on the radar scope out there, oh my God. And what we're coming into is even thicker, heavier icebergs as we progress along. Boys and girls, I don't think this ship's going to make it to New York. But listen, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If you're happy with the NEA and the Firemen's Union and your pension program, and you're happy with the economy, hey, get after it. It's just that a couple of three of us out here, we're getting a little nervous. I've been nervous for a long time. Now, let me tell you a little bit more here about this story. nor is New York State alone or at the top of the list in bureaucratic complexities. Indiana's school code at 1,250 pages a few years ago is more than 50% longer than New York's. California has 9,000 pages, and its 11 volumes are said to weigh more than 40 pounds. It includes such essential details as stipulating football uniforms be sterilized at least once a year. Districts may use armored vehicles to transport money to banks, and prohibiting parents from helping paint or clean public schools without union permission. It's been reported that Pennsylvania suburban school district superintendents must comply with 1,027 mandates, 70% of which are unfunded. A few years ago, then-Ohio Governor George Voinovich said school administrators in that state spend as much as 50% of their time filling out federal forms, which account for only 6% of the education spending. The U.S. Department of Education itself has said its requirements result in 48.6 million hours of paperwork annually, the equivalent of 25,000 full-time teachers. Last year, it was said, journalist Eleanor Burkett estimated, a typical school principal faces 470,000 federal, state, and local regulations. If her estimate is even remotely accurate, the result is a regulatory absurdity, an administrative impossibility. No one could possibly even be aware of so many obligations and regulations. Furthermore, policymakers continually making policy means that at any given time, many, perhaps thousands of these regulations are in the process of being amended, deleted, added to, or otherwise changed. And as someone once said about government in general, there are so many laws and regulations that all of us are continually breaking some without being aware that we're doing so or that they even exist. This is absurdity, so of public school boards and staffs. Now, none of this even includes case law, the results of an ever-increasing volume of court decisions, all of which would be bad enough if such detail had a positive effect. But what the late James S. Coleman and his colleagues concluded 40 years ago is likely to still be true. In a 1966 report, they said that they could not find any educational policy or strategy that ensured any student achievement. Did you get that? This is a 1966 report. They said they couldn't find a single educational policy or strategy that assured student achievement. And as former Xerox chairman David T. Kearns and Dennis P. Doyle wrote in their 1988 work, Winning the Brain Race, the truth is that prescriptive rules and regulations are necessary only if there are no measurable performance objectives. Once there are performance standards, schools can be encouraged to do it their own way. Common Goods Chair Philip K. Howard has now echoed this sentiment, saying the priority should be educating children, not compliance. Let them use their judgment and then be held accountable for their results. You know, America used to run that way. America used to be based upon results. If it works, let's do some more of it. If it doesn't work, let's scrap it and do something else. You can't do that today. And here's the bad part. You see, your retirement is tied to the national economy. Boys and girls, as the national economy goes, so goes your retirement. And that's just one example in the school system that we could repeat in every state in the union, in every school system, in every business, in every union, in every government enterprise. Boys and girls, that doesn't sound very good to me. Stand by. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. But they should. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, let me introduce you to another guy over here called the Privateer. This guy's name is William A.M. Buckler. He's kind of an odd duck. I wrote him a letter and I said, I have reviewed your Privateer on the air here two or three times. I'm pretty impressed with it, and I'd like you to send it to me and let me review it over here. He sent me a letter back and he said, if you do it, I'll sue you. I don't think he likes me, and I don't think he likes the Law Hour and editorial review, be my guess. But I got to tell you that this guy, Buckler, has his head screwed on straight, irrespective of what he thinks of me. Once in a while, you run across a guy whose IQ is, you know, a little more than 100. I think Buckler's is probably up around 110 or 15. And he puts out a paper here called The Privateer. And I'm gonna take a chance here getting sued. This is number 541 of The Privateer. And he wrote me a pretty caustic letter. He said, where in the hell did you get my paper? You're not on our mailing list. Well, I'm not on a lot of mailing lists, but there are millions of people around the world that listen to me, and two or three of them take the Privateer, and every once in a while one of them sends me one. And I happened to get one in the mail the other day from a listener, and it's called The Global Report, and I'm going to read just one page. It's a 12-page newsletter, comes out twice a month. And it costs a little money, but I think it's well worth $180 a year. 25 issues, $180 a year Australian. I don't know what that means. $180 a year Australian. I don't know if that's 600 euros or $600 or what the hell that boils down to. My guess would be that it's probably about $100 or 150 American, something on that order. As I recall, the Australian dollar is a little cheaper than ours. I don't know how that could possibly be, but that's what I've heard. Rumors around that number. So my guess is that for about $120 or $130 a year, you can subscribe to the Privateer, and I'm going to recommend the Privateer to you because it's an economics newsletter and a geopolitical newspaper that only has one other that I'm going to introduce you to a little later, and I'll do that tomorrow, called the International Forecaster. These are the two top papers, in my view, in the world today, the Privateer and the International Forecaster. And Buckler here, he puts out 12 pages,
And each page ends with the period at the bottom of the page. I like that. I like that. When you get to the bottom of this page, you have reached the end of that thought. That's the end of that report. And then page two has another report, and then page three and four and five. And for instance, he's got a report here on inside the European Union. It's on page eight. Europe is hopping mad at the USA, and when you get to the period at the bottom of the page, that's the end of the report on inside the European Union, and so on down the line. Now, the reason I'm suggesting these newsletters to you is that most of what I'm reporting to you is free. So as I report these to you, you mean you can get most of this information free. It's on the web. You can get it from Kitco. You can get it from the Mogambo Guru. You can get it from Jim Poplavin, and so on. And there's two or three of them here that you got to pay for. And the three that I recommend, of course, are the Money Changer, which is an economics newsletter. Then there's the Privateer, which is an economics and geopolitical observation newsletter, and so is the International Forecaster. So you got to pay a little money so that you can get a little more information. But the reason that I suggest that you do that is that Jim Lehrer, nice guy that he is, does not give you all the information that I think you need to know. Now, I'm not here to speak for you. I'm just here to speak for myself, and I'm going to tell you that Jim Lehrer does not tell George Gordon everything that George Gordon needs to know. So I need to go somewhere else to get that rounded out. Now, Jim Lehrer tells the official party line, and I watch Jim Lehrer every night so I can find out what my government wants me to know. Then, based upon what it is that I'm supposed to know from my government, then I want to go behind the scenes. And to go behind the scenes, I've got to go to somebody that's taking the numbers apart. So let me tell you a little piece of the story. I can't review the Privateer newsletter because he told me, don't you do that. But I'm going to take a chance here, and I'm going to review just one page. Just one page, Bill. And I'm going to promote your newsletter here to millions of listeners around the world. Maybe we can sell two or three extra copies for you. The Widening Global Gaps. This is the global report from the Privateer. This is the early December issue. I mean, this is hot off the press. Volume 541. The Bush administration's annualized U.S. trade deficit is $706 billion U.S. The budget deficit for fiscal 2006. Hang on. Now that's for fiscal 2006. It is predicted to be U.S. $521 billion. All right, boys and girls, if you get your pen and paper out here, write that down. 706, and then right under that, write 521. We're going to add them up. The combination of these two comes to U.S. $1,227,000,000,000. That's $1,227,000,000,000. That's a pile of money. Both these deficits must be funded, and the Federal Reserve has responded, having quadrupled the Fed funds rate to 4% since the end of June 2004. Expectations in the world's financial markets are that the Fed will keep raising its rates to 4.5% to 4.75% before it tries to stop. There are many past examples of large economies with trade and budget deficits trying to buttress their currencies with higher official interest rates. Usually, this merely slows the rate at which the currency falls until the economy comes back into near balance on its external account. Now, this has not been the case with the U.S. dollar since the end of 2004. Since the end of 2004, it has gone up, and it has stayed up, while U.S. gold has also gone up and kept going up. Now, this is a global signal that there are grave currency and market risks in place. I'm going to repeat that. This is a global signal that there are grave, I'm going to underline, boys and girls, the word grave, currency and market risks in place. And then I'm going to pause right there and remind you, boys and girls, that your retirement funds are invested in the stock market. All of you policemen and firemen and teachers And you workers at Lucent Technologies, your retirement funds at Delphi and General Motors and Ford are invested in the stock market. That's why I'm asking the question, is your retirement at risk? And Mr. Buckler says, again, if one uses magnitudes as the global gauge, it is the U.S. economy and the U.S. Treasury budget deficits that jump forward as the number one cause of these risks. The actions of the U.S. dollar and gold in logic scream that something else is going on here. Now, the privateer, in fact, reported this earlier this year. Here's what's going on, and it's called the Homeland Investments Act. I'm going to underline that. It's called the Homeland Investments Act. And this is a special act of Congress which allows U.S. corporations with offshore assets, this is General Motors, boys and girls, that has manufacturing operations in South Africa and France and Germany. This is Lucent Technologies and AT&T and all of these multinational corporations that have manufacturing plants and they have assets and the Hilton Hotels and the Holiday Inns that have hotels scattered all over the world. Okay. It's called the Homeland Investments Act. This is a special act of Congress which allows these U.S. corporations with these offshore assets and investments to repatriate their foreign earnings back to the United States and pay a tax of only 3.5% instead of the normal U.S. corporate tax rate of 30%. This is a gigantic tax break for U.S. corporations, but it has a use-by date, and this date is December 31st, 2005, just under 1 month from now. Foreign earnings are held in foreign currencies. To get them back to the United States requires that they be sold for U.S. dollars. And it is this selling, aided and abetted by the Fed rate increases, which has sent the U.S. dollar up and kept it up during the year 2005. Now here comes the Ides of March. The special Homeland Investment Act ends on December the 31st. The Federal Reserve is likely to stop its rate raises sometime in the first quarter of 2006. This will combine to pull the underpinnings out from under the U.S. dollar, and then the double deficits of the United States will again storm to the fore. In March of 2006 comes the arrival of the Iranian oil burst, which will make a global market in oil expressed in euros, not dollars. This Iranian move will coincide with the Fed's decision to pull the U.S. M3 behind the monetary curtain by simply not reporting the U.S. M3 monetary events in the future. These events, the end of the U.S. retrieval of foreign earnings, the end of the Fed's rate raises, the arrival of the Iranian euro-priced oil bursts, and the end of U.S. reporting of M3 will be the pivots around which the world's currencies will oscillate. The U.S. double deficit haunts the U.S. dollar. Now remember, boys and girls, you heard it first right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now that's the privateer. That's the end of the report. Now the next report comes on page 2. U.S. housing market is turning over. I've already reported that to you on the last program. I said the peak of the housing boom occurred in June 2005. Now we didn't know that until we looked back at the numbers from June, July, August, September, October, November, and December. Now we can clearly see that the peak of the world housing boom occurred in June of 2005. Now housing prices are softening, and then in 2006 and 7 you're going to see a break in the market. So if you haven't already sold your real estate, you can forget it. You missed the market. That's it. Okay? So you missed your opportunity on real estate. Now let's talk about the future, because as I mentioned in the last program, opportunity is everywhere. Opportunity is like pie crust. It's like rain. It's just everywhere. You know, just put your fork right into the pie there and just break it. And do it again and again. There's just more pie crust. Every time you stick your fork into the pie, there's more crust. And that's because the pie is surrounded by crust. The economic pie is just surrounded with opportunity. And because real estate is now behind us, stocks are behind us, bonds are behind us, let's concentrate on, well, what's next? And let's go buy that. And let's go sell it. Let's buy, sell, and trade in those things. As old Henry Kaiser said, find a need and fill it. There's always needs out there. Now, if you're invested in your 401k, if you're invested in dollars, or if you've got your assets wrapped up in dollars, you need to unload those, don't you? I mean, you know, I'm not an investment advisor, and I'm not here to tell you how to live your life or what you ought to do. I'm just here to give you facts and figures and tell you where to get the information. Now, the numbers that we're getting out of the mainstream press, you know, the numbers we get from Jim Lehrer and Bob Schieffer and so on, is that unemployment's at 5%, no problem. Inflation's at 4.3%, no problem. The economy is growing at 3.4%. God, that's great. Housing prices are strong. The stock market's over 10,000. I'm working and everything seems to be okay, so what the hell's the problem? Now, that's the average Joe Sixpack on the street. Now, I come along on the scene and I said, now listen, I just told you about what it takes to get rid of a teacher. You can spend $100,000 trying to get rid of a bad teacher in a public school and fail to do it. You can't do it. The union's too strong. Arnold Schwarzenegger took over as governor of California at the peak of a crisis, of a monetary crisis. And he said, I'll come in here and straighten this out. And Arnold Schwarzenegger just found out that the people of California don't want to fix it. They would like to have it fixed, but they don't want to do what has to be done in order to fix it. Well, okay, boys and girls, then you got a machine that's broke, and there's nobody here that can fix it. So that being the case, I don't want to invest in a broken machine. And the U.S. economy is a broken machine, and there's no reason to invest any more in it. And that's because the Americans don't want to fix it. Don't build that refinery in my backyard. I want gasoline, but I don't want another refinery built. So, fine. We have not built any refineries in America in 30 years. Boys and girls, that does not bode well for the future. We are not building nuclear power plants. We decided that's bad. We don't want nuclear power plants. So now you've got a shortage of electricity. Boys and girls, one of these days, the power grid in America is going to break. Just a matter of time. It's like Katrina and New Orleans. There's a period of time that you've got to fix it. And if you don't fix it, there's an inevitable day when it's going to break. I don't know when. Now, I want to mention this power grid to you because this is a big one over here that nobody reports on. And once in a while, you'll see a report maybe in the privateer or in the international forecast or something. But this isn't on the radar screen, but I want to put it on your radar screen. The power grid in America is all tied together. The people in California can be getting their power from Ontario, Canada, right now, as I speak. And the way it works is this. Let's suppose California has a deficit. That is, they're using more power than they're producing in California. So they got to get it from outside the state. So they just go to Nevada and say, give us some more power. Nevada says, okay, we'll give you power. And then that makes Nevada short of power, so they get it from Utah, who in turn gets it from Colorado, who in turn gets it from and gets it from and gets it from, until finally they get somebody that's producing a surplus. Now, except for the state of Texas, now you Texans down there have your head screwed on straight and you're off the grid. But except for Texas, which produces all of their own power and they're not on the grid, everybody else is on this grid. Now, there's been three times in my lifetime that this thing has broken down. Twice in New York, and then the last time was in New York and went clear out to Ohio. One of these days, we keep getting told by the experts they're supposed to know, you know, the guys with the PhDs, piled higher and deeper, and they said that one of these days this thing's going to break down in a domino effect and it'll knock out every power grid in the nation. And when it does, it's going to take 30 days to get it back up online. 30 days. Boys and girls, can you picture the United States of America without electric power for 30 days. Boys and girls, you don't want to be living here when that happens. You don't want to be in Miami or Los Angeles or Detroit when the power grid goes down. Now, you might want to be in Austin, Dallas, or Houston, but you sure as hell don't want to be in New York, Philadelphia, or Chicago. Now, that's just one more problem on top of the teachers' unions, on top of Delphi, on top of the bankruptcy of General Motors, on top of, and boys and girls, this is not a pretty picture, and you don't get this picture from Jim Lehrer. That's the point I'm making. And the question that I ask, is your retirement at risk? Boys and girls, millions of Americans are already retired. My entire graduating class of 1957 is already retired. I'm the only guy in the class that's still working. And as I said the other day, I said, God forbid that I should ever retire. Because if I was retired, I would be dependent. This is not the time, boys and girls, to be dependent. This is not the time, boys and girls, to be producing less. You want to be producing as much as you possibly can. And you want to be laying it aside like an ant, getting prepared for winter. Americans have been acting like grasshoppers. You know, grasshoppers do not prepare for winter. And in the book of Proverbs, your God, your Creator, said, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, and learn of her ways." So little Georgie Gordon has been over here diligently laying aside, preparing for this winter coming up. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I wish you the best. But you know, the people of California don't want to fix that broken machine. Now, President Bush, to his credit, came out not too long ago, it was right after the election, and he said, we got to fix Social Security. And the people of America said, not by the hair on our chinny-chin-chin are you going to fix Social Security. Well, at least the president. Now, I don't know if the president had the right solution or not. Maybe he's got the wrong solution, but he told you the truth, boys and girls, when he told you that Social Security's broke and you need to fix it. He wasn't whistling Dixie. Now, you get 47 million people that are retired on Social Security, and you people, when that thing goes upside down, honest to God, the government's going to pay you every nickel that they owe you, but those nickels aren't going to be buying bread, rice, and beans. It's going to be totally worthless. Boy, if I was retired on Social Security, I would be honing my skills and getting ready to go back to work. You better start stockpiling some beans and rice and some wheat back there and be thinking about what you're going to be doing in the future when this thing collapses. Now, next time, our last program here, we're going to take a look at the Financial Express. The worldwide economic crunch seems to be inevitable, and depression is coming. And a breakdown in the retirement is coming. There's a breakdown right on the horizon. Time to get ready. All right, we're out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there. I didn't give you the name and address for the privateer. I'll do that on the next program when I introduce you to the International Forecaster. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.